scripture today is familiar to many of you. It's Psalm 139, verses 1 through 14. O Lord, you have searched me, and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you know it completely, O Lord. You hem me in, behind, and before. You have laid your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness will hide me and the light become night around me, even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day, for darkness is as light to you. For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well.
All right. Well, to finish my children's moment about the money, I just want to point out before I start sharing with you some of my experiences in Germany, there's some other things about their money that are different too. So first of all of the coins have numbers on them so that you can tell how much each one's worth without knowing the language. The other thing is the euro is printed to where $1 bills are smaller than $5 bills, are smaller than $10 bills, are smaller than $100 bills, et cetera, et cetera. So by size, if someone couldn't see, they could feel two different bills and know which one they were paying with. Here you might notice, I don't know if any of you have any seeing impaired or blind friends in the States, but here there's actually a system where people fold their money in different ways. So horizontal might mean a 20 and vertical might mean a 5, and then folded twice might mean a $1 bill so that they can tell the difference in their currency, or in our currency. So just many things that I was exposed to from the very beginning that started making me think, why do we do some of the things that we do? Because sometimes we don't stop and ask ourselves, why do these systems even exist? Like the money thing. No wonder I'm having a hard time teaching Addie how much the quarter's worth. It never says 2.5 on it anywhere. It just says 25 cents. And like she's supposed to know what that means. Anyway, so what I actually came here to tell you. So if I asked any of you to watch a documentary with me about language and why it's important, why it exists, how humans use it, by your faces, I could tell there'd be like three of you who would be like, yeah, sure, that sounds great. I'll come on. Yeah, Mary Cotton's one of them. She's stoked. Then if I asked you, hey, do you want to come over and watch a movie about aliens and aliens coming to the United States and all over the world? Then there's like 5 or 10 people that say, okay, that seems interesting. So the cool thing was on my way to Germany, I got to watch a movie about both, and it's called Arrival. And I'm going to talk about that in a second, but I won't give anything away, I promise. Before I talk about that, I want to tell you why I was even in Germany. So at our school, we have a German language program, and our German teacher takes students to Germany every other summer, and she takes them from CV and CHS on a house exchange. So it's called the GAP program, the German-American Partnership Program, and they send about 15 students from a place called Vaduz in southern Germany. It's really close to the Swiss border. It's actually, you can just see Switzerland across the river. It's very much like Corvallis with the river running through it. It's beautiful. I think that's why many of our ancestors, if we have German heritage, moved to Oregon, is because they thought it looked a lot like home, made them feel a little bit better about being a 13-hour plane ride away, or however long it took them to get here. They send 15 students over, and they stay at homes in Corvallis, and then we send 15 students over to stay in homes in Germany. And so the students are together for about 6 weeks as a cultural exchange, and it's pretty amazing. So our German teacher does this all the time, but this year she had a problem. Her problem was a new grandbaby who lives in Germany. And so she didn't want to come back after 3 weeks. So she asked me late in the spring, she said, Krista, I know you don't speak any German, but you seem like one of the only people that would say yes to this. I need someone. So I don't know what that says about me. But she said, if you can get yourself to Germany, I can get you a family to stay with, and I can get you home. And I was like, oh, for how long? She's like, for about 3 weeks. And I'm saying, so for the price of one airline ticket, I can go to Germany for 3 weeks, and then you'll get me home. And that's it. That's all. And she's like, yeah. And I said, okay, well, how much work is it with the kids? She said, they're all with host families, so you only see them at school if you choose to go. So I went. I'd like to give a shout out on the record to my husband for watching my children for 3 weeks. Super dad is amazing. I think he'll be sleeping all of today. That'll be super great. So I'm going to miss the bread. It's 40 cents for a big loaf of bread that's freshly made. Fresh produce, you can get a big bag of peaches for $2. Their $5 box, you know how we have our $5 box for whatever, you know, fast food we want to get? Their $5 box is a baguette with fresh organic meat and cheese and a fresh peach on the side if that's what's in season. This season was asparagus season, so there was asparagus with every meal for like 50 cents. So I'm going to miss that. I'm going to miss the transit that you can walk or ride your bike anywhere, and that includes the train station, which will get you to the rest of Germany. We only had to use our car once in 3 weeks, and that was to go to a family reunion that was 2 hours away in this remote Black Forest location, so very optional. So I'm going to miss all of that, but I am very excited to be back with you guys, and if you ever get a chance, you should go. Okay, so back to the movies, Arrival. So on the way to Germany, I wanted to try to stay awake as much as possible so that jet lag wouldn't be a thing. Didn't really work, but I started by binge-watching House of Cards, which is a show about a congressman on his way to the White House and all the terrible things he does, and it hit way too close to home for me on a variety of levels. So I decided I really needed to watch something mindless, and so I was like, oh, an alien movie, Arrivals, I'll watch that. And I just became engrossed in a story about language and how it creates our reality and how we communicate with each other and what's the difference between a tool and a weapon. And if you can't communicate that to someone, how are you going to survive in a situation that's super stressful? So if you haven't seen it, I'm not going to say any more about the movie, but go see it. So it put me in this frame of mind, thinking about language, thinking about the people I was going to communicate with, being terrified because I didn't speak any German, and here I was going into this small border town, and I was going to try to do my best to survive. And I think if I had not accidentally watched that movie, it would have not allowed me to get some of the lessons that I got while I was there on this vacation. So do yourself a favor and watch it. So first, what does English mean to the rest of the world? Oh my gosh, English is important. Everyone in this small town spoke some English. Here, I have spent the last year being, as if anyone's ever watched NCIS, it's a show, criminal detective show, but there's a character there who sometimes hits people on the back of the head when they say something dumb or think something dumb, and they get gibbs, they get hit. And I feel like all year, I've been smacked in the back of the head with my privilege and my power and the things that I've taken for granted. Because my skin color, my socioeconomic status, my religion, my gender identity, my sexual orientation, pretty much everything that makes me me, except for being a woman, gives me some kind of power in the world. Even my language that I speak. And I never realized what a power English had until I came as a visitor to a foreign country and everyone else just worked around me. I didn't speak the language, so they spoke my language. They got me the food I wanted based upon the words that I learned how to speak. And it was insane. Even like little old ladies who I was trying to find the river, and I would go up and say, excuse me, can you point me to, where's the Rhine? Where's the river? And she would go, the river's right down the pathway. You just take a right and a left, and it'll be right there. You don't need to use your hand motion. I'm like, oh, okay. My house mother, she grew up in West Germany before unification, and they were taught to read and write English and read and write Russian because they weren't sure which way they were going to need to go, but they knew that they were going to need to know one of them. So she can't speak very well, but she could understand everything I was saying and then somehow communicate with me. And I don't know if I could get the high school kids to understand how powerful their native language is and how they cannot take that for granted. So if you've ever been using language as an excuse not to travel the world and meet new people and share with them that not everyone from here is crazy, you should just go, because it's kind of the default language for most of the world that isn't a third world country. So please go travel if that's what's been holding you back. So kids start learning English. You guys might think this is interesting for those of you who are in school. Kids start learning English in first grade with songs and games and all of that. Then it gets more rigorous in fifth grade. Then every year during their English lessons, they pick a new topic to study in English so that they can learn all the technical vocabulary. So one year it might be chemistry in English, one year it might be math in English. I barely survived math in my native language. I can't even imagine taking a math class in a different language. I happen to go to seventh and eighth grade English classes because that's when they study American cities and American history. And so I wanted to go to see what they were studying. So I walked into the class at the moment the teacher asked, can anyone tell me why the Phoenix is a good example of Atlanta? Why the Phoenix is a good symbol for the city of Atlanta in the United States? And because the kids are having to think about their language, they're using words that our kids would never use in describing something because they're really having to think about it. So one little girl raised her hand, she said, well, I think Atlanta is the Phoenix City because during the Civil War, when the Southern Army was losing, the mayor burnt it to the ground so the Northern Army couldn't have the city. And from those ashes rose a metropolis of modern buildings and industry that is very present and alive today. Another little boy raised his hand. I think it's the Phoenix City because of their history of racism and how they're rising from the ashes of those hard racial relationships, because in the 90s, they elected their first black mayor named, and I can't even remember what her name was, and that's terrible of me, but it was in the 90s, so I was four, so give me a break. And I'm like, do our kids know any of this about our city? The kids had to put on a timeline when Martin Luther King was born, when the Civil War hit Atlanta, when CNN was started, when Coca-Cola was invented there. And they had to put this all on a timeline, and I'm wondering, do our kids even know that about our own cities? It was insane. I only got asked if I elected Trump every other class period. That's a whole nother message, but kids know what's going on in the States because we are that important. Our language is that important. I was that important, they were asking me. The 11th grade English teacher didn't want me in her classroom at first. And everyone there was very welcoming, very pragmatic, and very strict, which I think sometimes people think is them not being nice, but no, they just like to think through things. And I went to the teacher's lounge and I said, hey, I would really like to come practice English with some of your 11th graders because they're gonna take their big test next year and one of the subjects to graduate and get their diploma is English. So I would like to come practice some native English for them. And I could tell she did not want me in there. They were talking in German and things were getting heated. And so finally I said, what's the problem? And she said, you are our guest and I just don't want to offend you. And I said, well, what could you possibly do that would be offensive? She goes, well, today the topic we're reading about is gun control in the United States. And I was like, ooh, I'd love to come to that one. This will be super fun. So I got there, and they had a bunch of articles from US papers. Two-thirds of them were from Breitbart News. And she was having her kids read them because that was one of the president's advisors' papers, so it must be important. We must all read it. And so she wanted them to read these and then talk about gun control and how it's different. So while I was a huge pusher of more gun control regulations, the students asked me, have you ever fired a gun? I said, no, I have not. Do you have any guns? What do you mean? Like personally, well, no, I don't own any guns. Do you have any guns in your house? Yes. How many guns do you have? 3. Why do you have these guns? Well, one of them was my husband's grandfather's, one of them was my husband's dad's, and one of them is a family heirloom that we don't know who it belonged to, and it's just been passed down and it's in our gun safe. And they said, so you're a huge fan of gun control, but you have 3 guns in your home with 2 small children. And I said, yeah. And they said, well, would you give those up? And I said, I don't know. I've never really had to think about it before because I always knew it just would never happen. So it really put me in a really weird situation to actually think about my reality for kind of the first time maybe ever. But that might be another sermon. So other things that language are important. When they ask you, do you want to have a cup of coffee? As a teacher, I imagine walking to some dark room with no windows, seeing the coffee pot that had been made at 6 a.m. by our office assistant, still sitting there with hopefully still warm coffee if nobody turned it off, and then pouring it into a glass with some coffee grounds and praying that the milk wasn't sour and praying that there was sugar so that we could make it taste somewhat decent. But no, there's an espresso machine, because when they ask you if you want to have a cup of coffee, they're going to make you a cup of coffee. And after I took that coffee and tried to go back to the classroom, did you see that catch? After I went back to the classroom, she said, no, what? Come sit with me. Come talk with me. And we found two comfortable places to sit, and we took 10 minutes to have a cup of coffee, because that's what they meant when they asked if you wanted to have a cup of coffee. And I think about how many opportunities I've missed. I learned so much about people in 15 minutes, and how much of that have I not asked each of you out in the narthex with our awesome coffee that just got made, asking you some of those same questions. So maybe we should, after church, have a cup of coffee and actually talk to each other. So if English is so important, why learn another language? That was the thing I started thinking. And that didn't hit me. I don't know if I mentioned this, but my host family were doctors. He was a urologist and she was a gynecologist. It sounds like the beginning of a terrible joke, but it was reality. And while we were there, we started talking about the healthcare system in the United States. He couldn't understand why everyone didn't just have healthcare, because to him, that just made the most sense. And we started, of course, talking about my dad's battle with cancer. And he said, what kind of treatment was your dad on before he passed away? And so I said, oh, he was on this experimental trial where they were taking out his white blood cells and cloning them in some lab in New York, and then they were gonna send him back. And he listened and he listened, and he said, yeah, we used to treat melanoma like that too. And I said, what do you mean? He's like, yeah, we tried that about 10 years ago, and we never could get it to be more than 50 or 60% accurate, so we've moved on to different treatments, and they're working a lot better. And then I think he realized, because he's translating in his head what he's saying, he realized how that just like hit me like a ton of bricks. And I said, what do you mean you tried it 10 years ago when I was 20 and my dad was super healthy? What do you mean? And he said, the problem is we have so many studies, so many medical studies, that all of our doctors who speak mainly German write in German, and nobody translates them into English. And so your doctors don't read the studies because they don't speak German, so they don't know what we're studying about. He said, but the good news for us is we learn English, so we can read all of your studies and then base our stuff off the new and improved things that you're doing. And he said, so what we need is more people who speak both languages to translate the studies so that your doctors can know that we tried this 10 years ago and maybe we should try something else. So if you need one reason, if one person who spoke German would have read one study and translated that into English, and one of my dad's doctors would have read that, who knows what that would have done. So language, again, super important. So take those language classes in high school while they're free, both of you too. All right, so I talked a little bit about what our healthcare system says or not says about our values. They pay a pretty progressive tax system there, 18 to 42% based on your income. I thought 42% seemed a little bit high, but when I calculated if I were at that tax bracket, the money I spend saving money for college, because their college is free, the money I save for college, money I pay in my student loans, and money I spend on my out-of-pocket maximums, I was actually bringing home less money than I would have had I paid 42% in taxes and could get all of those things for free. So just more things, more math to think about. Again, I said math wasn't my strong point, so I'm not going to focus too much on the numbers on that. Some things in two countries are the same. One of the best parts about staying with a host family was being able to see that love and family and babies and grandmas, those are all the same thing. My favorite memory, if you don't follow me on Facebook, was baking an apple pie with their Omi, their grandma. She spoke zero English and I spoke zero German, and we made an apple pie together, and it was the most wonderful experience. Lots of talking with hands. At some point she just decided she was gonna say whatever she wanted in German, and I started to worry it was kind of like when you talk to a dog, where you could be saying, you're just the worst dog in the whole world. I just really hate working with you on this because you don't know what's going on. And then I would sit there going, yeah, yeah, yeah. You just love me, I'm so good. Later, Antonia, my house sister, told me that she was saying all good things, for real. So hopefully, so some things are the same. Watching, I went to graduation and I got to see, I could tell which parents were which person, belonged to which kid based upon how they were looking at each other and how they gave each other hugs and who they decided to take pictures of, and I didn't have to speak any of the German to know that that was going on. I didn't need to know that my house father was trying really hard not to yell at my host brother when he spilled the sugar, proceeded to suck the tablecloth up into the vacuum cleaner, and then knock all the muesli all over the floor. And he was going, "Julius, Julius, Julius." I didn't need to know any of the other words to know that that situation wasn't going well. Backing up to graduation, because of the drinking age, they sell beer and wine at graduation, and I think we should bring back to the United States. As a teacher and a parent who's had to sit through graduation, being able to sip a glass of champagne to celebrate your kids is pretty awesome, and it makes the time go by quicker, just saying. So, the title, Neil pointed out, of my sermon and my conclusion is Surviving is Not Living. So I was sitting at the table with my host dad, Martin, and we were talking about how he had been on call that week and what his schedule was usually like and what my schedule was usually like. And he said, "I'm gonna go to bed early because I need sleep like a baby needs sleep." He said, "I could sleep all the time." And I said, "Oh really, how much sleep do you try to get?" And he said, "Oh, I really like to live on 8 to 10 hours of sleep a night if I can." And they did take a nap after lunch, followed by afternoon coffee or ice cafe, which is coffee with a scoop of ice cream in it. Definitely awesome. And I said, "Oh yeah, I can survive on like 5 to 6 hours of sleep." And he looked at me and you could tell he was doing the Rolodex thing of words, and he got to survive. And he goes, "I didn't survive. Surviving and living are not the same thing, Krista. I didn't ask how much sleep you could survive on. I asked you how much you could live on." And that happened about 5 days into my trip there. And then every moment after that, I wondered what else I was surviving on. Was I surviving being a mom? Was I surviving at work? Was I surviving in my relationship with my husband? Or was I living those things? Because as someone who's been through the cancer battle in the family, I think we should reserve the word survival for the things on the bottom half of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Do we have enough food? Do we have enough to drink? Are we sick? Because during a cancer battle, you're surviving with little moments of living in between. There are moments of living, but I refuse to just survive anymore. And so my message coming back from Germany is, what are you surviving and what can you be living? Amen.